settle down, it'll all be clear. Don't pay no mind to the demons, they fill you with fear. The trouble in my drag you down. And it is another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in to A Conversation on Life with yours truly. So if you want to learn more about Hope, you can at investinghope.com. You can listen to this show via podcast, of course, at investinghope.com, TuneIn app, Google Play, wherever podcasts are found, Apple iTunes, of course. And then, or you could listen to it live right here at Joy 620 each and every week at Tuesday at 5 o'clock. Either way you want to do it, we're happy that you're listening. Today we are going to bring up an issue that we talked about a few weeks ago. I made the argument a few weeks ago that the nursing home deaths during the COVID-19 pandemic should be the story. That should be what every outlet is leading with. That should be what our cable news outlets are covering. That should be what our local news outlets are covering, especially in certain states. And finally, folks are starting to pay attention to that. And these numbers are troubling, to say the least. We have done very little to protect the most vulnerable to this virus. We're going to start there. Then we're going to look at some information that's going around. Of course, a few weeks back, we talked about Harvard and their push against homeschooling. They have doubled down and brought out another article attacking those that wish to homeschool. We're going to talk about that as well. There's also a poll that was out recently claiming that the majority of Americans, even going as far as saying 70% of Americans, are for more abortions during the COVID-19 pandemic. But I'm going to look into the weeds of this survey and of this poll that was taken, because I think it's important when people put out data, it's important that we see what data and what metrics were they using to receive that data, to get that data. And this poll that was put out saying that women's reproductive rights should not be tampered with during a pandemic, I think the honesty of those taking this poll were questionable at best. And so we're going to look at that as well. But let's start with the nursing home deaths occurring during COVID-19. This is important. Again, we talked about this issue, and if you want to hear more about that conversation from a few weeks back, you can look at the archive there on the podcast, investinghope.com. But we talked about how in New York and New Jersey and some other states around the country, they were actually mandating that nursing homes, assisted living places, were taking back in infected patients. So what that means is a patient, they test positive for COVID-19, they're taken out of the nursing home, that they may be hospitalized. They quickly remove them from the hospital and get them back to the nursing home or assisted living facility. And in some cases, in doing that, they were putting infected patients that were still contagious back inside of nursing homes. Now, we've been told since the beginning, since anyone has been talking about COVID-19, the coronavirus, since anyone's been talking about it, we've been told this is a virus that affects the elderly and those with pre-existing conditions in the most dangerous way possible. That means that most of the active cases, the extreme cases and the deaths would occur in the population of the elderly and those with pre-existing conditions. Now, who houses or who calls the nursing homes their home? The elderly, most of the time, with pre-existing conditions. So who should we be protecting more than anyone from this virus? Well, the obvious answer, since the beginning of this, the obvious answer is those that live in nursing homes, those that live in assisted living facilities. We were told from the beginning, look, for young people, this isn't that big of a deal. But what we don't want to happen is young people to get the virus and then take that virus and give it to their mom or to their grandma or to their granddad or to their dad. That was what we were told. Hey, we need to close our schools because we don't want our students to get infected with this virus. It's not going to affect them that much, but we don't want them to be a carrier and take it back to their grandma. Look, that is the very reason why we shut down everything. We were told, hey, we got to lock it down because the vulnerable population is going to be hurt the most. But what we really did in doing that is we locked down everybody in their homes. We canceled school. We canceled events. We did all these things. We stopped going to church. But it appears we did very little to protect those that live in nursing homes. We did very little to protect those that live in assisted living facilities. Listen to these numbers. The numbers that I'm about to give you are percentages of deaths that occurred in nursing home or assisted living. This is based on data reported May 12th of this year. So very recent. Listen to these numbers. In the state of Washington, this is where the first breakout occurred that we had on record. Now, we are starting to see with some data that's coming out that this virus was here much longer than we knew or believed. But one of the first cases, one of the first breakouts happened there in January in the state of Washington. 61% of all the deaths in the state of Washington due to COVID-19 occurred in nursing homes or assisted living facilities. In the state of Oregon, 60.2% of all deaths occurred in nursing homes or assisted living facilities. In Nebraska, 62%. New York, 67%. Wisconsin, 81%. Georgia, 50%. Florida, 40%. Tennessee, 35.8%. Texas, 47%. California, 36.3%. Maine, 54.7%. Virginia, 60%. Now look, Kentucky, 58.9%. Now, I could go over these numbers all day long, but the reality is we knew from the beginning that the bulk of the deaths were going to occur in the elderly population. That was the most vulnerable group. But yet we had states that mandated nursing homes and assisted living facilities take back in patients that may still be infected, may still be contagious. And so as we look at those numbers, and if you watch any of the media coverage, you have seen that it's really interesting that your red states, your conservative states that have said, hey, we're going to start to open things back up, Tennessee, Georgia, Florida, just to name a few, are getting hammered by the media. Places like New York that have seen that they've really been the epicenter for this virus. And Mayor de Blasio of New York City, just right before, right in March, was telling people to go out, have fun. This isn't a big deal. And then the Governor Cuomo, who's been heralded as this hero, a political figure we can look to, a no-nonsense guy. Yet he mandated these nursing homes take in these patients out of fear that hospital beds were going to be full. Look, maybe in some parts of New York they filled up some hospitals, but across the country we haven't heard that be the case. There's an interesting article today in Newsweek that's calling on Andrew Cuomo to own the nursing home COVID deaths. It's written by Jonathan Tobin. It says this: Governor Cuomo was looking to diffuse rather than to stoke the anger of New Yorkers when he was asked this past Sunday whether someone should be prosecuted for what has happened in the state's nursing homes during the coronavirus pandemic. As far as Cuomo was concerned, the quest for justice on the part of bereaved relatives of residents in the homes was not productive. After all, the governor reasoned, quote, we can't keep everyone alive, end quote. Is that what you want your governor, your elected officials to say? He said, we can't keep everyone alive during a pandemic. That is particularly dangerous for the elderly. As far as he was concerned, nobody should be hauled into court to account for the catastrophic death rate in such facilities. Listen to that. So some families have said, hold on, you mean to tell me the state mandated that the nursing home that is housing my mom, they were mandated to take in patients that were infected by this virus and still contagious, knowing that the elderly are the ones that are affected by this in the most extreme ways. And now they're being told by the governor there is no legal channel for them to go after these folks. They've actually instituted it into law. They can't sue the state. They can't sue the nursing homes because of the COVID pandemic. The article goes further, but what he failed to mention was more pertinent than his philosophical musings about mortality. Because if anybody deserves some blame for what occurred in New York nursing homes, it's certainly Andrew Cuomo. The pandemic turned the three-term governor into a media star. Cuomo's ability to show empathy for victims while demonstrating that he was in charge during the crisis turned his daily pressers into must-see TV. The contrast between the governor's sensitive performances and President Donald Trump's press briefings, which provided a mix of boast and hand-to-hand combat with a hostile press, was widely noted. Heretofore largely dismissed as something of a political thug who lacked his famous father's Mario's grace, speculation about him replacing former President Joe Biden as the Democratic presidential nominee emerged as a popular topic of conversation. Now, listen, that goes back to what I was saying. During this pandemic, Cuomo has been lifted up on a pedestal as the politician we need right now, the leader we need right now. No nonsense, just tells it like it is and shows empathy. And some have gone as far as arguing he should replace Joe Biden, or at the very least be Joe Biden's VP nominee. But lost, the article goes further, but lost amid the adulation has been one troubling fact. It was an order from Cuomo's Department of Health, backed up in public by the governor, that was directly responsible for a large share of the massive death rate in facilities that cater to the elderly. The March 25th order. Now listen to this. We knew by March 25th that this virus was no joke. Places were already starting to shut down. We saw the writing on the wall. Schools were going to be closing soon. Colleges were thinking about what to do with their students. A breakout already occurred in Washington. The pandemic was reaching all over the globe, and it had finally reached the states. We knew all of that by March 25th. Yet, in New York, the March 25th order handed down by Cuomo's health department mandating that those recovering from the illness could not be rejected by nursing homes set in motion the events that inflated the state's deaths, COVID-19 death tolls. The implication of this rule, which was apparently strictly enforced, was that facilities had no choice but to admit carriers of the contagion. The results of this blunder were as brutal as they were predictable. Now think about that. By early May, statistics showed that nationwide, approximately one out of every three COVID-19 fatalities were either residents or workers in nursing homes. The toll was especially heavy in New York, largely because the homes were forbidden from rejecting those who had already come down with the illness and likely to help it spread. But as late as April 26, Cuomo was still doubling down on the order. During a press conference, he said again that nursing homes had no right to challenge the state order despite what he acknowledged was a feeding frenzy of virus deaths. April 26th, he was saying they have no right to challenge the order. By contrast, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who was widely pillared for a response to the pandemic that was allegedly both too little and too late, allowed nursing homes in his state to refuse to admit virus victims. As a result, the death toll in nursing homes in a state with a bigger elderly population was estimated this week to be approximately 875, a lot less than the approximately 5,000 estimated deaths in New York nursing homes by the middle of May. New York state orders was motivated by fears that those who had survived the illness might be rendered homeless if facilities had the freedom to keep them out. But the proper response was not to deny facilities the option to protect their residents. Governor Phil Murphy repeated the same mistake in New Jersey with similar results. We'll continue with this when we come back, but I want you to understand the difference here. We had a naval ship dock in New York. We had Samaritan's Purse put up makeshift hospitals in Central Park. Folks, we had the beds available for these patients if the nursing home said, no, we are not going to take them back in for the time being. And yet, up until April 25th even, they were told, you must take them back in. We'll talk more about that when we come back.
Give me your heart, give me your song, sing it with all your might. Come to the fountain and you can be satisfied. There is a peace, there is a love you can get lost inside. Come to the fountain and let me hear you testify.
So as the conversation continues, one thing that I want to point out today in what we've been pointing out for weeks now, and really what we pointed out on this show since we started it, was look, if you don't get the value of life right in the womb, at its earliest stage, then you're not going to get it right at the end stage. And what we have shown as a society and as a culture, not just here in the country, in our country, but around the globe, is there are some parts of our populace that are expendable. Our laws, our mandates, our rhetoric says those that are growing inside of a womb are not human, have no value, and are expendable. Our laws, our mandates, and our rhetoric says those that are elderly, that are living in assisted living facilities or nursing homes, are expendable. Now, they can mask all they want to. They can say, oh, we care deeply about every individual, and if the policies we put in place even save one life, then we've done our job. But the reality is their actions say something very much different than that. Just a few weeks ago, the governor of New York, Governor Cuomo, was using pro-life language when he said, we need to do everything we can to protect life. And life is more valuable than the stock market. He was saying all of these things, and even pro-choicers were applauding him, putting him on this giant pedestal. And while he's saying all of that, he's mandating and doubling down and telling nursing homes, hey, guess what? You have no right here. You have to take these patients inside of your doors. Now, yes, we know that the most vulnerable to this disease, to this virus, are the elderly. Yes, we know that your institutions house the elderly. Yes, we know that this virus is most dangerous to those that have pre-existing conditions. And when you couple pre-existing conditions with being elderly, it is really an equation that's going to result in very bad things happening to those people. But even with all that knowledge, even the basic person knows that, we're still going to mandate that you put these patients back in your facilities. And now they've said, if you're a family member of one of those people that were killed or harmed because of those policy decisions, you have no path to seek legal anything. And so that's where we are. Look, you know, a lot of times we'll say, or you'll hear people say, look, the president has blood on his hands, or you'll hear people say the governor has blood on their hands, or this policy killed people. Look, these policies that mandated nursing homes do this isn't just rhetoric. This isn't fear-mongering. It 100% literally killed people. It did. So let's go back to the article that's featured in Newsweek. And it continues, the problem was compounded by a policy of secrecy. So if this was such a good mandate and such a good policy, why was it done in secret? That's my question. Here's what the article says. Families of the elderly were not informed that their loved ones were being put in harm's way. But while Cuomo conceded at one point that he wouldn't put his mother in a nursing home right now, end quote, he was at the same time backing up his administration's decision. It took 6 weeks after the state issued its order for New York to finally back down and reverse the ruling. In the meantime, hundreds, perhaps thousands, of lives were lost. Due to the budget problems, especially in private facilities that were exploited at private profit centers by owners, many of the homes in question were already failing to provide adequate care to patients even before the pandemic hit. But there's no denying that Cuomo's order helped turn a bad problem into a full-fledged disaster. It is in that context that Cuomo's willingness to spike any effort to hold someone accountable for what happened in his state's nursing homes must be seen. It is a tribute to his party's iron-fisted control of the New York State Legislature that no one in Albany is speaking out to demand justice for the victims. And with most of the media obsessed with trying to demonstrate that Trump has, quote, blood on his hands for his pandemic missteps, there appears to be little appetite for rebuking Cuomo. Cuomo is right that many of the elderly victims might have died from some other cause this year. It's also true that he didn't consciously will their deaths, but fortunately for him, the partisan nature of the nation's reaction to the pandemic and the obsession with Trump perceived failures will ensure that he gets a pass for a deadly mistake that would have sunk him if he were a Republican rather than a Democrat. Now, again, that's not just empty rhetoric, folks. Just think what would have happened if the president came out in a press conference in March. The president of the United States of America, President Donald Trump, in March, if he would have came out and said, I am putting a national mandate that all nursing home facilities must take back in patients that are recovering from the virus. Yeah, they may still be contagious, but that's a chance we're going to take. If the president would have said that, that is all we would be talking about right now. And that's just the truth. That isn't whataboutism. That isn't me making things up. That is just the simple truth. We know that. We know it. Well, how do you know it? I know it because places like Tennessee, places like Georgia, places like Florida are opening up and they got a lot of flack for it. You know, Colorado was opening up at the same time? Didn't get any flack. What's the difference? The governor of Colorado has a D beside his name. You see, now these states are coming out and saying, hey, if you want to play sports, you can come play sports. If you're a professional franchise and you need a place to play, come play. Florida governor took it even further and said, if your state will not allow you, we have places for you. And then immediately, the governor of California, who just on Sunday was saying that schools may never open again, comes out on Monday, 24 hours later, and says sports teams can come back starting June 1st and play without fans. You see, this is about politics. That's the frustrating part. And in the midst of the political rhetoric and the back and forth and the you know, now we have politicians calling each other names and all this silliness, absolute silliness. In the midst of all of that, we are on pace to see that half of all deaths occurred in this country occurred in nursing home facilities. Think about that. In the midst of all the mess that's occurring in Washington, that's occurring in legislatures across this country, the black eye on all of this, the thing that's not being talked about much at all in mainstream outlets, is the deaths that are occurring inside of our nursing homes. Now, if you look at the numbers, I believe roughly every year 25% of all deaths occur in nursing homes or assisted living facilities. You know, it houses the elderly with pre-existing conditions. But here's the thing. We knew from the beginning that this virus was going to target that population more than any population. And we did very little for them. And in fact, in some states, we mandated that these places take in patients that were recovering. And again, it's like I said earlier, it's not that they would have been homeless. We had places for them. We saw pretty quickly we weren't going to need all the overflow that we provided. Convention centers across this country put beds. You had parking garages with hospital beds. You had Samaritan's Purse in Central Park. You had a naval ship in New York. And very few of those places were used at all. And New York looked at Samaritan's Purse and said, we don't need your kind here. And told them to get out. While in the meantime, they're forcing nursing homes. And claiming that because we need beds, you got to take them back in. Even though we had beds available they could have used until they completely recovered. It's shameful. Absolutely shameful. When we come back, we're going to shift a little bit and look at some homeschooling conversations that are occurring out of Harvard as they double down on their take of homeschooling. We'll also look at a survey that was recently put out attacking pro-lifers. We'll come back. Some come and be chainless.
Come and be fearless. Come to the foot of Calvary. There is redemption for every affliction. Here at the foot of Calvary.
So I wasn't planning on taking the first two segments to discuss the nursing home issue, but that's how it ended up. And frankly, you know, next week we may talk about it again. It has to be in our minds. The fact that we allowed this to happen is shameful. And let's face it, folks, a lot of the people that are in nursing homes and in assisted living facilities are already forgotten about. It's a forgotten population. You know, we went and visited my kid's great-grandmother on Mother's Day, and we had to look at her through the window and call her on the phone. She's been confined to her room for weeks. For weeks. They've been bringing her meals to her in her room. So it's a lonely place. Where many of them I have already felt forgotten about. And you see, in society, it's easy for us to forget about those growing inside of a womb because we can't really see them. I mean, sure, we see that the woman is pregnant, but we don't see the baby. So it's easy to forget about it. It's easy to say, hey, I was pregnant yesterday and I'm not pregnant today. I had an abortion. You know, and just move on about our day. It's easy to have grandma, great-grandma in a nursing home and go, I mean, she's not how I remember her, and I don't want to remember her this way, so yeah, I don't go see her that often. You see, that's what we do as society. We justify these things, and in reality, what we're doing is we're pushing them to the edges. We are aborting our youngest, most vulnerable in the womb, and we're aborting our oldest, most vulnerable in their last stages of life. That's where we are. And folks, both of them are wrong. And anti-gospel. Did you hear that part? My grandparents were staples in my life. Always. The elderly should be valued in society. And we had our moment. We had our chance. A virus comes down. A pandemic comes down out of nowhere. Now, there's a number of reasons why that occurred, mainly being China. But a pandemic comes. We have our chance to show the world. We're going to do everything we can to protect the most vulnerable to this virus. Well, who's the most vulnerable? Who is this virus most deadly to? Well, we've seen the numbers out of Italy and out of all these places around the globe. The virus is most deadly to the elderly, especially those with pre-existing conditions. So who should we protect? Now look, if you're in any strategy meeting, political or otherwise, and you've been told a virus is attacking the elderly, especially those with pre-existing conditions, that is the demographic we need to protect the most. If you're in that meeting, and then the first question that is asked is, okay, so what do we need to do? Everybody should respond in unison. Well, wouldn't it make sense to protect our nursing homes and assisted living facilities? Because that is where these folks predominantly are going to live. That's where you're going to find them. That would have been the logical response. Instead, you have states going, hey, I need nursing homes. I'm going to mandate that you take patients back in that have been infected with this virus. Shameful. I have no other word for it. And we need to keep it in front of our minds and keep it in front of our political leaders. They need to be paying attention to it. Now I want to shift gears a little bit and look at a few weeks ago we talked about Harvard. And in Harvard Magazine, they interviewed a law professor and her take on homeschooling. Now that angered a lot of people, frustrated a lot of people, me included. And we don't even homeschool our kids. But I believe it's interesting. I believe in school choice. I believe that as a parent, I should have the choice of how we're going to educate our children. And it's interesting, the folks that claim to be pro-choice on a number or on the issue of abortion are apparently not pro-choice in a lot of other ways. And so that's where we find ourselves. And there was a lot of outcry, a lot of people going out and saying, hey, this isn't right. So this law professor, Elizabeth Bartlett, had an opportunity to kind of clarify some things. And instead of clarifying, I guess she did clarify, she doubled down. The Harvard Gazette gave Bartlett a chance to clarify her statements in an interview published this past Friday. In the piece titled, quote, "A Warning on Homeschooling," Bartlett doubled down on her anti-homeschooling stance, proposing even stricter government regulations on the practice than in her article, or her original article. Bartlett attributes the increased interest in homeschooling in America to the, quote, "growth in the conservative evangelical movement," explaining that, quote, "conservative Christians use the practice to, as a way to, quote, escape from the secular education in public schools, after a failed effort to have their children exempted from exposure to alternative values in schools." Now, she goes further. "Many homeschooling parents are extreme ideologues committed to raising their children within their belief system, isolated from any societal influence." Bartlett warns, offering examples of families that believe that black people are inferior to white people and that women should be subject to men. Bartlett goes on to explain that homeschooling parents, it's dangerous because children may not have the chance to choose for themselves whether to exit these ideological communities. And society may not have the chance to teach them values important to the larger community, such as tolerance of other people's views and values. You know, it's interesting. Listen to that sentence. Society may not have the chance to teach them values important to the larger community, such as tolerance of other people's views and values. Hear that one more time. Such as tolerance of other people's views and values. Her whole interview, her whole article in Harvard Magazine was to show that she is not tolerant of Christians and those that wish to homeschool. And she's saying that we should not be able to homeschool because our kids may not learn to be tolerant. I mean, think about how silly that is. When offered a chance to explain her proposed presumptive ban on homeschooling, she offered a clearer view of how exactly she hopes to regulate the practice. Her proposed policies would effectively ban anybody from fully homeschooling their children. She said, "I'd like to see a radical transformation of the homeschooling regime." She said plainly before explaining that parents wishing to homeschool would have to demonstrate that they have a legitimate reason to homeschool, as well as they are qualified to provide an adequate education, and that such an education would be comparable in scope to that of public school. She goes on to explain that those parents granted permission to teach their own children would still be required to put their children in at least some school courses and other activities so they get exposure to the set of alternative values and experiences. Now think about this for a second, okay? She's saying that there's some values that homeschooling kids aren't going to learn. She's saying that the reason people want to homeschool, and she's acting as if every homeschooler is Christian and leans to the right. That's not true. But let's just go with what she's the basis that she's putting forth. So she's saying that Christians want to homeschool because they want to pull their kids out of society, and there's certain things that may occur at a public school that they're not able to opt out of, and so we want to pull them out of school. I guess she would probably say that about me, that our kids go to a Christian school. She would probably make the same argument that, well, you're pulling them out of public school because you weren't able to get them exempt from this or that. Here's my problem with all of this. First off, my problem with it is this is America and this is the freest country on the planet. And if I want to homeschool my kids, I'm going to homeschool my kids. If I want to put my kids in a Christian school, I'm going to put my kids in a Christian school. If I want to put my kids in a public school, I'm going to put my kids in a public school. In some areas, I think if you want to put your kids in a charter school, you should be able to put your kids in a charter school. If you want to do something of a combination of those and do a co-op where they may go to school for 3 days and you homeschool for 2 days. Or maybe this semester I'm going to homeschool. Next semester they'll be in public school. And the next semester they'll be in private school. This is America. And I should be able to do that. Second, I would say that it's interesting to me she's talking about a value set. and being tolerant of those with values. Do you know across this country there are drag queen Bible story hour, not Bible story, drag queen story hours. So public libraries, public schools are having drag queens come in and then read to children. Now again, free country, parents want to take their kids to that, that's fine. But if that occurred at a school that my kid was going to, I should have a right to opt out of that. In the same way, if my kid is praying at school with a group of other students, non-Christian students should be able to opt out of that. And they do. And so it's silly and wrong-headed to just simply say, hey, we need to ban homeschooling. I know of plenty of homeschool families where the kids have tons of values. They've been very productive in society. They love their neighbors well. Do you have some, every now and then, have some crazy folks that homeschool? Well, yeah, absolutely. But you guess what? We have some crazy folks that public school. And we have some crazy folks that put their kids in Christian school and private schools. We're just going to have some crazy folks. Look, post-Genesis 3 world, you're going to have some crazy folks. But it's frustrating when the attack and the argument is based on, well, you have these certain Christian values, you're intolerant. When the very argument that they're making shows that they aren't tolerant. If they were tolerant, they would say, look, I don't agree with homeschooling, but if that's what you want to do, then I'm going to tolerate that. I'm going to be okay with that. It's not accepting, it's just saying I'm going to tolerate it. But see, they don't want tolerance, they want acceptance. See, if you bucket anything they put forward, well, then you're intolerant. Even when I'm saying, look, no, that's fine. It's just not me. I'm not going to agree with it or support it. But sure, go do what you want to do. But that's where we are as society. When we come back, we'll quickly look at a survey that was put out recently and how you need to look at the behind the curtain of some of these survey questions to really see the agenda being put forward. We'll talk more when we come back.
Now I'm alive and born again, rescued from the grip of sin. God, your love came crashing in and pulled me out of the fire. I'm a survivor.
So today's been a good day. Hopefully you've enjoyed the conversation. And as we finish up, I did want to look at it's a Navigator survey that came out. And it's interesting. Kate Smith, who reports, I believe, for CBS. Let me double check on that. Yes, she's with CBS. And she claims to be an unbiased journalist, and I don't know if any of those exist in 2020, but she covers abortion and what she would call reproductive rights. But she really has just become the marketing arm for Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry. And so she tweeted out today, she said this, new, nearly two-thirds of Americans believe politicians, quote, should stop doing anything to restrict women's access to time-sensitive reproductive health care. That includes 79% of Democrats and more than half of Republicans surveyed by Navigator Survey. So you see that and you're like, oh my gosh. I mean, that's a huge flip in the numbers. Well, then you click on the link and you say, okay, well, let's see what that survey really was asking. And the whole point of the survey, I mean, listen to the first question. Trump's incompetent response is making this crisis worse. So you know from the onset that, this is going to be going after anything conservative, anything Republican. And so that's what it goes, and it just keeps going. Second question is, as millions lose jobs, Trump is looking out for the wealthy and well-connected, not those who need the most help. Does that sound like an unbiased question? Or does that sound like a question to garner some type of narrative or desired response? And it says Trump continues to ignore experts, endangering Americans. Now, have you watched any of the press conferences? You know, for what, a month we had a press conference every single day, and who did we hear from? Medical experts. But then they get down to the actual part of reproductive care, and here's the thing. They say reproductive care. Now, they didn't ask, hey, is it okay to kill babies in the womb? They didn't ask that. They didn't say, hey, during a pandemic, is it good to shift funds? Is it good to use a much-needed PPE inside of abortion clinics? Is that good? No, they didn't ask that. They asked, should politicians stop doing anything to restrict women's access to time-sensitive reproductive care? So a rational person would go, well, reproductive care, that means they need to see their OB. That means they need to get an ultrasound. That means they need to have their 20-week checkup. That means so you hear that question and you go, politicians shouldn't be stepping in the way of that. But you see, what reproductive care to them means is abortion. That's it. It's all it means. Doesn't mean anything else. So if you got that question and you were asked, is it okay for politicians to restrict reproductive care? And you go, well, hold on. Politicians shouldn't step in the way because they need to have their normal everyday checkups with their OBGYN. But you see, that wasn't the question. The question was about abortion, but they didn't use the word abortion. Why? Because they know they wouldn't have got the response that they wanted. And I could spend a lot more time on that. I'm not going to, but it's important when you see these numbers and this data and these statistics, whether it be about pandemic or whether it be about abortion or whether it be about anything else, read the fine print. See how they're reporting these numbers. Dig a little deeper. Don't just take my word for it. Don't just take whoever you're listening to's word for it. Actually look at the data and how the data was garnered. How did they get it? What did they ask? Who did they ask? It's important that we do that. Don't obsess over it. Take a break from it every now and then. But pay attention to the narrative that's trying to be pushed. Because, folks, there is an agenda. Everybody has an agenda. The right, the left, and everybody in between. There's no denying that. I have an agenda with this show. I'm not apologizing for it. My agenda is to see that abortion would be unthinkable in a civilized society. My goal, every day I get up, every day I do this show, is to get more people to see that abortion is a tragedy that we need to step in and correct in our society. Not apologizing for it. That's the agenda. But when we look at the greater landscape across our country and the things that are being said and the things that are being done, we need to make sure that we're taking the time and the effort to read further. Think for ourselves. Read further and go, hold on, that they're pushing a narrative and an agenda that just isn't true or isn't honest. It's okay to ask questions. It's okay to do those things. But just be smart about it. I encourage you to do that. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you again next week.